Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by the lovely Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for taking the time to come on today and sharing a little bit more about you and what you do. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please, Stephanie?
Yeah, my name is Stephanie A, and I'm the executive director, founder, and executive director of Adoption and Beyond. We're a small child placing agency that's located in Kansas City, and we're licensed in both Kansas and Missouri. And I started the agency about 23 years ago now.
Wow. 23 years.
Yes.
I guess adoption has changed a lot in those 23 years.
It has, because I've been in the adoption field for over 25 years. So I used to work for another maternity home / child placing agency prior to starting the agency. And so it's changed significantly. Some pieces are for the better, some pieces are not so much for the better, but it has changed a lot.
Yeah. So you started the agency with 2 years experience at the maternity home. So that was a big leap of faith for you to.
It was, yes. So when I was at the maternity home, how I kind of stumbled into adoption is that I wanted to work at a maternity home. And so I went to inquire about a job, and they did not have any, but they said they did in the adoption realm. And I said, well, I don't know anything about adoption, because I literally did not know anyone who was adopted. I had no adoption connection at all. And they said, well, come and interview. And I did, and I was hired. And then 9 months later, I ended up being the child placement supervisor. So it was kind of a baptism by fire through that. And then I had to leave that position to finish up my master's degree in social work. I already had a master's degree in family life education, but no one recognized that degree. So I had to quit at that time to finish up my social work degree. And I started exploring opening my own agency. And there were three other single person agencies here in Kansas City. So I knew it was possible. And I had the connections with the attorneys through my other work at the other agency. And so I was opened in Kansas, in Kansas by the end of the summer. And then 2 months later after that, I was also open in Missouri as well. So,
Wow. What a growth. Yeah. I love it.
And I just started out of my home and
yeah,
just grown over the years, and here we are.
Yeah. So how many staff do you have now, Stephanie?
So I'm still the only full-time employee. Yeah. And then I have contract, I have one part-time employee, and then I had contract employees. Right. They're actual employees, but they're as needed because they're placed throughout Kansas and Missouri. So we work with families all over both states.
Sure. Yeah. And from remembering, reading your bio, you've got one of your own children has come to you from adoption. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We have four biological children and then one through adoption from foster care.
Yeah. Okay. And how old's the child that came to you through foster care?
Yeah, we adopted Shayla when she was 8 years of age, and she just turned 20 on Easter. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So a wealth of expertise, both professional and personal. That's what we love to see. That's what I love to see on the show. I think it's a great combination, because the show is all about empowering the listeners with what people that have been through this and are going through it, are learning, continuing to learn. So if I say the word thriving adoptees to you, Stephanie, what does that mean to you?
That means adoptees who, to me, it speaks to adult adoptees. That's what comes to my mind, is adult adoptees who have grown up in healthy adoptive homes and have a healthy perspective on their adoption and are productive citizens. That's really what I hear when I hear that word to describe adult adoptees.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So you just mentioned one of my favorite words here, in answering that question. Do you want to guess what that is?
Thriving? No, I can't guess what that is.
Okay, I don't know. Why am I asking you to do that? I guess because I think perhaps the immediate answer, the obvious one might be that healthy word, but actually it's the you talked about a healthy perspective, and for me, perspective is everything. My take on what the word perspective means, but I'm interested to explore what do you mean by a healthy perspective?
So what I mean healthy is that for me, a healthy adoptee has integrated their nature and nurture, and those are combined together and they coexist with each other, and they are integrated well. And really that starts with the adoptive family, I feel, in how they raise their child and how they speak of adoption as they raise their children. And is it positive? Are they still struggling with, some families come to adoption through infertility, affect a large majority. And do they feel threatened by the birth family that this child came from, or do they embrace this child knowing where this child came from, just to help the child grow up and integrate both pieces of themselves in a healthy manner, to not feel like they have to choose, but that they have that they fully embrace both aspects of this child as they grow.
Yeah. And what do you think helps adoptive families, adoptive parents do all that? What are the ingredients in a successful adoption cake? I use metaphors a lot, but I've never used that one. And I don't know. Yeah. But I guess I'm trying to give you some pointers on that. What's important for you?
Well, education for one. So we're huge advocates for education. We require our families to attend and to take certain classes and online training before they adopt, because I feel that it's important for prospective hopeful adoptive parents to understand that adoption's more than love. It takes a lot from them as well to make sure that they help their child grow up embracing all aspects of them. So that comes from just being comfortable with the word adoption to begin with. So we tell our families, you know, because most of our adoptions are from birth. So they're straight from the hospital.
Yeah.
Now we do help with international adoptions as well. So sometimes the children are a little bit older, but just becoming comfortable with the word adoption. We're so happy we adopted you. We're so happy that you came to our family through adoption. So just being comfortable with the word adoption and being comfortable with the fact that this child is not biologically yours, and that's okay. And feeling comfortable with knowing that this child has another family out there and embracing that family. So,
yeah. Is there anything else that comes to your mind in terms of how parents are raising, adoptive parents are raising the child? You know, you talked about integrating the nature, nurture, making sure they're happy to coexist. Getting comfortable with it comes in the early days, well, before the adoption happens, and in the early days. What about the raising, how parents raise their kids?
Well, I think, you know, children can pick up whether you're comfortable talking about adoption and whether, you know, in our family, adoption actually comes up quite often. It just comes up through natural conversations. And this is just, you know, how, and my daughter did give me permission to talk about her today. So just want to say I do have that permission. So it's just being a natural part of conversations and a natural part of your child's life, it's not that we dwell on it. It just naturally comes up in conversation. And I can't think of an example right now off the top of my head, but it just naturally comes up and we're comfortable with it. And we talk about it and we're comfortable with this.
Yeah. Okay. So the word, you know, that healthy perspective on it, I guess what you're talking about here is how we see it, and kind of the meaning that we put on it. And I guess different people have different perspectives on adoption, especially, you know, the meaning that some adult adoptees give to it. You know, so we have a continuum of healthy perspectives and people that are still have always been troubled, you know, troubled perspectives, should we say.
Struggling, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. How do you see that amongst adult adoptees, that spectrum?
So as you said, you know, I've been a part of a group called American Adoption Congress here in the United States, and I find that there is a wide spectrum of, there's angry adoptees and there's accepting adoptees who really don't even struggle with the fact, or don't even have any, they don't have any desire to search. They don't have any desire. They don't have any desire to know their biological family. And there are some who are very angry, who aren't able to have this information because it's being withheld from them by, you know, birth certificates not being open in many states. And so I see a wide spectrum of how adoptees have integrated being adopted into their life. I've seen the full spectrum.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I see that too. And I have used the phrase angry adoptees. The thing that I found about angry adoptees is getting called angry adoptees often makes them more angry.
I can understand that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know,
but they're rightfully angry for a rightful reason, though. So, so I can empathize with that, or sympathize with that, that there is a reason for it, and that shouldn't be downplayed. So,
yeah. No. Are you
saying that the main reason that you see that they are angry is about this secrecy and the information being withheld from them?
Absolutely. That's what I see more often than not, is that's the reason. It's because, or it could be the fact that they have sought their birth family, and the birth family has rejected them for whatever reasons that they have faced rejection. So I see that, but I see more often than not is that there is a barrier put in front of them that's not in front of other, you know, people who are born biologically into a family who can have access to their birth certificate. So the fact that the secrecy is being held from them, I mean, so even families who are adopted internationally, not having access to their birth records or birth family is very, you know,
yeah,
very sad.
Yeah. I see that secrecy and that withholding of information. I've talked to a couple of people about this recently, notably an adoptee rights lawyer on one of the shows when we've been talking about that. And he, you know, he couldn't get the court records, and even though he knew he'd figured out all the details, but he couldn't actually get the court to do it. So he just kept on going. I found that I'm a quite a persistent guy, and I see persistence.
Yes.
I see a lot of persistence
in adoptees. Maybe that's just because I see it in myself and I kind of project it on them. I don't know. But they seem to be quite dogged, persistent when it comes to this sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, and they should be, because yeah, this is rightfully their information. So
yeah. I also see, I guess I see some other anger that's related to the way that they were, what happened to them before they were adopted, you know, out of foster care, or what happened to them afterwards. You know, it's sometimes when they haven't been placed in the best homes, I guess that's perhaps a more historic thing. So right, that there's two tracks to this. There's the kind of the secrecy and the court stuff, and then there's the internal stuff about how the adoption actually went, you know.
True.
So your agency is called Adoption and Beyond.
Correct.
Yeah. So you definitely have that focus on the beyond stuff as well. So
that's correct.
Yeah. So what the beyond stuff, that wasn't a very well, I didn't put that sentence together very well, did I? The, you know, post adoption. So what are some of the main things that you share during that post adoption support? What are the, where are you coming from on that post adoption support, and what have you learned during that post adoption support that can be of assistance to the adopted
parent? So it was important for me in the name that we're here beyond just the adoption. The adoption's an event. So, and this is a lifelong journey for adoption. So we wanted to be sure people knew that we're here beyond just the adoption process. So for us, really, it's been families, adoptive families reaching back out to us, you know, with challenging situations. I was just contacted this last week from a family where their 12-year-old, she's very angry. She is transracially adopted. She's actually has three different nationalities. And so she is really identifying with all three, but she's identifying with the negative aspects of all three. And so they were seeking to find a therapist. And so I was helping them identify an adoption competent therapist to work with the daughter to help her with this anger that she's having. And then also I've been contacted by families where they learned on Facebook that the birth mother passed away. And they're like, how do we tell our child this information? So a lot of times it's really adoptive families reaching back out because, you know, the adoptees are now, you know, 23 years old. So not a lot of them are reaching out, but their families are, their adoptive families are reaching out just for guidance as the child grows.
Yeah. Okay. So what options do you, what, you know, you've mentioned the therapy option there. What other, we've talked about kind of like the adoptive parents training. We talked about therapy for the child. What other options do you see helping adoptive families that are struggling with issues?
I think really connecting with other adoptive families also, but also allowing the adoptees to also connect. There are adoptee support groups that are online. And so getting connected with people who understand and who can, because unless you've gone through it, you don't understand. So it's finding connections with people who truly understand what you're experiencing is really important in helping everyone who's involved.
Yeah. So have you, I mean, you mentioned the American Adoption Congress earlier on. Are there, because the first thing that pops into my head, and I had a discussion with one of the guests on the podcast yesterday on this, saying there's that there are the support groups and the support groups. They're all, they come in all shapes and sizes, and they also come in all levels. So, you know, we've talked about a continuum from what was the word that you used? Accepting adoptees to angry. A lot of the Facebook groups for adult adoptees are very angry places where people congregate to vent. And I guess for some people the venting helps, but I don't see in some of them a particularly supportive environment. Are there any groups that you've come across that are perhaps a little bit more supportive?
Yes, and I can't think of the names off the top of my head. It's on the resource page of our website.
Okay.
There is a link to that group there.
So what I'll do then for all the listeners is I'll put that, I'll copy and paste that link from the resource. Well, okay. I'll copy a link to the resource page into the show notes so that people don't, so people can track it out, you know, perhaps when they're not driving or walking, you know. I listen to podcasts and audiobooks all the time, you know, when I'm in the car and I'm walking the dogs and stuff like that.
So right.
I know it's important that, you know, to be able to get a link to the resources when we're back at the desk and able to take action. What are the questions that I'm not asking, Stephanie? Just like if you were to, this is an opportunity to share, for you to share what you have found, both either personally or professionally, and both in terms of helping adoptees thrive. What could you share? What could you share with the listeners that I haven't kind of signposted you to with my questions?
You know, I can't, you know, really, I feel that it's important not only for the adopting family, but also the birth family to be involved in the child's life. So I feel we practice open adoptions, and we see that being a relationship that's built and continue over time. So I feel not only the adopting family needs to feel comfortable with adoption, and because the children can pick up if you're struggling with the fact that they are adopted and that they were not biologically born within the family, they can pick up on that and they know whether this is a safe topic or not. And so the more families become comfortable with it and the children know that this is a safe place, the more open they're going to be to express all of their feelings. And so I also feel that it's important for birth families to also be involved in the child's life to help answer those questions that they have, you know, why was I placed? Who do I look like? Where do I get my musical abilities from? So I feel not only is it the adoptive family's responsibility, but I think it's the birth family's responsibility to also make sure that this child grows up having information to, as they grow. So
Yeah. I mean, it's a very good point on this kids picking up stuff. So they have this uncanny ability, like a tuning fork. It's in the solar plexus, isn't it? Apparently, the part of the body it's got the most nerve endings. So when we say we have a gut reaction to something, that's because the solar plexus, where our gut is, has the most nerve endings in the body, or something that I once heard. And that is their radar. That's the place where we all pick up on the truth. And I guess that's where we pick up on the atmosphere around us, and the safety, the warmth, and the openness and the loving nature of the environment that we're growing up in. As soon as I say that, the thing that pops into my head is, have you seen that the model that looks at people's it starts off with being unconsciously unconscious and then about a skill, and then then we become conscious that we're unconscious of how to do the skill.
Right. Yeah.
So, and then we get to a bit where we are unconsciously competent.
Right.
Yeah, I said it the wrong way around. I said unconsciously, we're unconsciously incompetent. So we don't know we can do it.
Okay.
We don't know we can't do it. We don't know that we can't do it. We just haven't. We're completely unaware, and we've got to that bit where we get to the bit at the end where we are unconsciously competent, which essentially means that what we do is so second nature we don't even see it as a skill anymore. We just kind of
like take driving,
like driving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if there's anything from that kind of that journey that you could share, because it strikes me as you've been in this area 25 years. Your daughter was 8 when she came to you. She's 20 now.
Yeah.
So you might be in that zone where you're so unconsciously competent that you don't know how good you are, what you're doing. And I'm just wondering if there are any learning points along there, along that 12 years personally, or the 25 years professionally. Were there any kind of big aha moments when you realized you needed to change, and you'd been parenting this way, or you saw that you needed to make a change? Does anything come to mind?
So our daughter has mild intellectual disabilities, and so as a parent, I was, having raised biological children, my expectations were she would be tracking along with our other biological children. And there came a point where I had to step back and realize that intellectually she tracked more along, 3-4 years behind. And once I recognized that, I then adjusted my expectations and how I parented her. And so that was really instrumental and really helpful. But I think for me, really, it's educating ourselves and always educating ourselves. And so I learned a great deal through the years just by going to adoption conferences and listening to speakers and listening to different topics. And so for me, it's a continual learning process. And so that I think is important, is for like I said, adoption is a journey and it's a lifelong journey, and that learning doesn't stop. It's one event, but then it's a journey after that. So just continually educating ourselves is, I think, important.
Yeah. So, and are there any particular resources, websites, or organizations that you would signpost on that, or are they're on the resources page as well, I guess, are they?
So no, so I'm a part of National Council for Adoption. So that's the one that I'm very much involved in right now, but I've gone to past like American Adoption Congress conferences, the Evan B. Donaldson, when it was around, its ethics conferences. So I've just attended a lot of conferences through the years as a social worker. So a lot of my adoption knowledge just comes from learning from people from the conferences, and then passing that knowledge on to the families that we work with. So,
yeah. You talked about expectations there, and that's been the podcast episode that pops into my head on that, on the expectations. And the realization side is one that I did with a Canadian lady called Robbie Seal, who has she's an FS, she has helped, helped her kids through FASD, and she's had mm-hmm. that and her the turning point for her when was when she realized that this was a brain thing. You know, this you know, it was as when it became as clear as the difference between night and day.
And even with my biological children, my sons have ADD, and it was a therapist one time who was helping our son who made me realize that he is not forgetting things on purpose. It's just happening. And once I became a much better mama after that and realized that he's not doing this to make me angry. He's not doing this. This is just, it's just his brain. It's just what's happening. And so it helped me reset my expectations. So not only for my child who came to me through adoption, but also my biological children as well. So
it's interesting. Yeah. So where does this tuning in come from? Is it, you know, is it natural? Is it something that you work at? You're talking about, I guess, putting yourself in the place, you're talking about putting yourself in the place where you're going to learn. You're talking about soaking up knowledge in the adoption space and seeking out new opportunities and becoming tuned in to your children's needs. Have you got any, anything that could help the listeners tune in more to what their kids need?
So a resource that I was remiss to not say earlier is that creating a family has a lot of really great online courses, and she has a podcast as well. So creating a family because as a social worker, we have to get what are called CEUs, continuing education units. So, and then also being Hague accredited agency to do international adoptions, we have to have adoption specific training. So it's through these trainings that I've learned a lot of things that I'm able to then bring into my practice and share with family. So I think what's really important is for people to understand that it's always good to continually be learning and continually listen to others. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah. It's funny where I had Tracy from Creating a Family, the communities manager. I interviewed her yesterday for the podcast. So that's great. I've yet to meet, it's Dawn, isn't it? That's the.
Yeah. Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Dawn is the, I heard it as Don and I thought Dawn. You know, like Donald.
Oh, rather. Yes. Then,
it's just that, when I was talking to Tracy, she's talking about Don. I thought it was Dawn, but, you know, that was just like me tuning in 3,000 miles away, 3,000 miles away with my English accent. Yeah. So, we're talking here about, that continual learning journey. And I guess we are, we're modeling what we want in our kids. I mean, this phrase lifelong learning has been around in education for quite a while. I think I remember hearing it in the 80s or the 90s, but lifelong learning from an adoption perspective and for what matters most to us in terms of our family is definitely a must. Right. Have you come across any trainings? There's obviously that you like creating a family and big organizations have, as well as yourself, clearly you have that kind of adoptive parent training. Have you come across any training for kids or for teens?
There's the WISE program, WISE, that's an acronym. And it is geared towards adoptees who are in school and how to talk to their classmates about being adopted. And it seems to be geared a lot towards children who are joining families through foster care and how to talk about adoption with others in the school environment. So that is a kid focused program that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Okay. And have you come across anything else?
That is the big one that I can think of that's child specific. Everything else is more adult related.
Yeah. Because one of the things that this is on my mind a lot, that I hear all this adoptive parent, I tune in, I listen yeah. to adoptive parent adoptive parent educational sessions about trauma and things mm-hmm. like that, and I think, well, parents have got to kind of that's going to help them parent better, but there yeah. doesn't seem to be anything, to my knowledge, that helps us empower our kids to learn about trauma. So parents are having to kind of translate what they see, what they hear on their trainings,
right,
into something that's more kid friendly.
I would say that's correct, because I'm not aware, other than the WISE program off the top of my head, that's yeah. geared towards children. Yeah. I think there are therapists who help with these kinds of things. And then there are, I know that there is a local support group for preteens and teens also here in the Kansas City area that helps with just being and getting together with other adoptees. So.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, do you think it's important to explain, to be able to explain? Do you think it's important to be able to explain trauma and stuff to our kids?
Oh, absolutely. And so one thing that I wanted to say, that I wanted to be sure that I said today, is one thing that's important as a parent is, I talked about being comfortable with adoption and allowing your child to talk, but also don't assume because your child is not talking about it that they're not thinking about adoption. So it's important for us as parents to also, bring up, hey, do you have any questions? And allowing that room for them to know that they can freely speak about adoption and any questions that they have. So sometimes parents feel, and I hear this a lot, they're like, my child doesn't have any questions. They don't ever ask me anything. Well, have you introduced this yourself and being a topic? To see if they have questions, to know that this is something that they can talk to you about.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's, I was talking to the parent of a who has, like yourself, biological and adoptive kids, and her adopted kids are in their teens. And this is, the kids in their teens just don't want to talk, then right. They don't really want to talk. They all teenagers, most teenagers don't want
right.
to,
right.
they don't want to listen, or they think that they've got it right,
right.
I'm sure right. I did, 40 yeah. years ago, I was the yeah. one that was right. And my parents were the one that had it wrong.
And that goes along the lines where if you have any information about your child's adoption, they should be told, and they should know by the time they're preteens. They should know the good, the bad, the ugly, if anything that you have, and because if you wait until your child later, it's going to cause a lot of hurt for them to know that you had information that they felt you held from them. So if they have this information in the preteen years, then they're able to integrate this information into their lives as they go through the teen years and try to figure out who they are. And you really can't do that unless you have all the pieces and parts of yourself. So that is also something that's vitally important.
Yeah. That brings another question to my mind in terms of there's a rabbit hole that parents talk to me, adoptive parents talk to me about. And it's the rabbit hole of, is this a child issue? Is this a human issue? Is this a human issue? Right. Or is this an adoption issue?
Right,
and
right.
That mm-hmm. seems to be a little, as I say, it's a little bit of a rabbit hole that people
yeah.
can get stuck down. Right. Have you got anything that you could share on that?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think you really should just assume that most things are just life issues, but then also not forgetting the lens of adoption. and but most chances are it's going to be just a life issue, and not to make it a bigger deal than it really is, but not forgetting that lens of viewing of why a birthday may be difficult for a child, and why is this birthday difficult for the child, you know, and not forget that there is the adoption lens as well, but it's not the main focus, I don't feel.
From my own perspective, it's usually an overthinking issue.
Right.
If I'm at that level, if I'm thinking, is this adoption related, or is it, you know, I'm talking about me, my commentary on the voice in my head, you know, my commentary on what's going on for me. If I'm at that level where I'm trying to determine the source, then I'm generally speaking, I'm overthinking, I've already gone down the rabbit hole.
Okay. Yeah.
And if I spot myself that I'm halfway down the rabbit hole, then hopefully I can kind of work my way back up to the top, rather going further down into the darkness of overthinking and overthinking. And then overthinking about overthinking.
Everthinking.
I'm good at that. I'm good at one of my past greatest skills has been worrying about worrying.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you've come across that.
Right.
Yeah. This area of helping our kids understand the trauma. Do you think that's an area that's worth looking at, or, you know, do parents translate it? I mean, are parents trying to translate the information that they're taking in and make it child friendly, or are they letting sleeping dog lie and they're thinking, well, this is just about me and my parenting. This falls fairly and squarely on my shoulders. I don't need to try and educate my child. What do you see happening in this area?
That's a really good question, and one that I find challenging to answer. I always err on the side of caution, and I think parents need to help their children understand trauma. And I have a curious question for you.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So you said in your bio that you were perfectly fine with adoption until you were 40.
Yeah.
And you found out, I think it was a teddy bear. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So why did that teddy bear all of a sudden trigger that in you?
Well, that's a really good question. And the answer is it didn't.
Okay.
It didn't. And I'll tell you why, because that sounds a bit bonkers. When I found out I was told that I was adopted before I was two.
Right.
And I had no adoption issues growing up.
Right.
And somebody might tell me that I was suppressing them, but I wasn't. Not in my opinion, right? And I've dug a lot into this, right?
Right.
So I found out at 40 that the teddy bear was from my birth mother. My first reaction was one of curiosity.
Okay.
Then during a conversation with somebody else a couple of months later, I can't remember how long it was later, I was relaying this story and my anger spiked. I had this huge anger, a very intense, very short-term swing. So I said a lot of profanity, which I won't say. The essence of it was that my birth mother didn't love me enough, and that this teddy bear was a consolation prize.
Got it.
Yeah. And the lady that I was with was quite a conscious individual, you know, quite emotionally intelligent, quite an aware sort of person. And she said, Simon, really gently, I'm not sure it was, I don't think it was kind of like that. I'm a mum. And I don't think it was like that. And she said that in a way that I saw the truth in it. So I saw her gently, not challenge. I saw her giving my her opinion on my the statements that I just made. Well,
right.
They weren't statements. They were violent. You know, they came out of my mouth like a volcano. And so the volcano stopped erupting, and it went straight back down, but it didn't go down to zero. So there was still a little bit of smoke coming out of the out of the top of the volcano, but the it wasn't erupting anymore.
Uh-huh.
So what I see looking back on that event. And that was 14 years ago, that outburst.
Okay.
I see my own damaged ego.
Okay.
So there's a lot of talk about identity in adoption. And it's a phrase that's bandied around all the time. Right. And nobody really gets to the bottom of it. I've been very deep into what identity is all about.
Uh-huh.
And my take on it is that people don't go deep enough. So ego, my ego was damaged.
Okay.
But I'm not my ego.
Right.
The ego is the false self, isn't it? That's okay. How it's described. So mm-hmm. the true self is deeper, and you know, it's the in my world, it's the. Have you heard that guy's French philosopher? I do quote it quite a lot, and I still don't know how to say his name. He says, "We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience."
Okay.
Spiritual beings having a human experience. Mm-hmm. So the human experience, that's where the ego is. The spiritual being, or if I can shorten that to the spirit, who we truly are, that's never wounded.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the ego part of us that is wounded. And that's my take on my stuff. But it's taken me 14 years to get together.
Do you feel that if you knew that teddy bear was from your birth mother from the very beginning, that it wouldn't have been, and it wouldn't have impacted you so strongly?
Yes, but I'm glad that it happened the way it happened.
Okay.
Because essentially for me, I got to a point at 40 where when I was around 40, I guess kind of I mean, you could say it's a midlife crisis, really.
Right.
I got to the point where business success, which had been very elusive for me, had left me unsatisfied.
I see.
And still worried about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that adoption had made me unhappy. So, a combination of those two different three things. Business success being a hollow victory, business success not stopping me worrying about the future,
mm-hmm.
and the adoption or relinquishment, if we want to put it, my being relinquished had made me unhappy. Those were the three things that sent me on the journey that I've been on for the last 14 years, leading me to do what we're doing right now. So I'm very glad that that happened, because if I wouldn't have gone anywhere near the adoption, I wouldn't have gone anywhere near the adoption space. Uh-huh. If that hadn't happened when I was 40, and if I hadn't been there, then I wouldn't have been doing the show. And I really have, I found, because I've only been in this adoption space for, 8 months now, in terms of doing podcasts and stuff, right?
Yeah.
I found my zone here. Now, before that, I was working with kids in schools. And I thought I'd found my zone with that. But I was frustrated because I couldn't scale it. Whereas with this, this is like 10 times more fun.
Right.
10 times more engaging. And all because of that teddy bear. So
that trifecta. Yeah, the trifecta happened.
Yeah, it all came together. And were in my mind all around the same kind of time. So
right.
So I don't know if that answers you.
It does. It left me wondering, you know, how could we help adoptees avoid that midlife crisis or whatever, you know, you alluded to. So,
well, can we? Yes, is the answer. But the answer is in the identity piece.
Okay.
So, and it's also related to the question that I asked you. So it's playing a lot on my mind at the moment is there's very little training for kids.
Correct.
There's very little training for kids. And you've mentioned therapy. Yeah. Therapy hasn't really worked for me. It has been key part. It didn't work when I tried it. But it was another key part that led me to my next step along. So I'm delighted that I did it. But therapy is very expensive. It's not very scalable. There's therapists and there's therapists. Like any profession, the best ones are hard to find, the best ones won. And some kids don't want to go there.
The family who reached out to me, you know, about their daughter, she doesn't want to do therapy, you know, so what do you do?
Yeah. So what do you do? Yeah. I've done a lot of work in schools. I've done some one-to-one work with kids and I know that there's a group dynamic. It's sometimes far easier for shyer kids because the shyer kids can sit there
and listen
but that shyer kid is the one that probably doesn't want to go to therapy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's that, and the group dynamic is in a training is there where you can't really have that in a kind of you can't have that in a one-to-one. And the other option, you know, you talked about is support groups. Yeah, it's great if the support when I'm doing my learning, like I'm a lifelong learner, as I say, listening to a podcast, I'm listening to content a couple of hours a day most days. I want to be if I'm on an online course or a support group, I want to be with somebody that's further ahead of the journey than me.
Okay.
I don't want to be learning from fellow strugglers because I haven't got anything to, for them to learn on. Then I need to learn with people that are, I don't want a pity party where we all get together and moan about the challenges.
Right.
I want to move forward. So, sorry, this is supposed to be me interviewing you. I'm just obviously clearly very passionate about this stuff. So you asked me some questions and cool.
Yeah.
I'm there.
sorry, it's the social worker in me.
Yeah, that's cool. The most important thing that I think to avoid this is for us to be very clear as adults on what we mean by identity.
Okay.
And the simplest metaphor I have on that is the poop in the diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Poop in the diamond. It's not my metaphor. It's from a guy that is a mentor of mine, and he doesn't relate it to adoption. He's not in the adoption area, but we see poopy behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Act, acting out is a great eye-opener. Yeah. That poopy behavior is caused by poopy feelings.
Correct.
Those poopy feelings are caused by poopy thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not our behavior.
Right.
We're not our feelings, and we're not our thoughts. So nothing about us is poop. We are, every single one of us is a perfect diamond obscured by poop.
Right.
And if you think about, especially kids adopted from foster care or kids adopted older, they have been through a lot of poop in their lives.
Right.
So for me, the thing that makes the difference for all of us, whether we're adopted or not, is seeing the diamond in the poop.
Right.
And the clearer that we can see that, the better we can point it out to our kids and to other people around. And we're going to treat them like diamonds rather than poop.
Right.
We don't. We treat our kids like diamonds, but we're going to treat other people. We're going to forgive. We're going to forgive others for their poopy behavior to us.
Right.
I wish I could do that more of the time, especially with building contractors. I'm having a challenge with building contractors. So that's the thing about identity and that's what I mean by identity. And mm-hmm. Nowhere in identity have I put my body. We're not our bodies.
Right.
Nowhere, you're talking to Simon Jonathan Ben today. You might not know my middle name, but it's Jonathan. But for the first 5 weeks of my life, I was David Anthony Flower.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
we're not our names. We're not our names. We're not our bodies. I don't think that we are our nationality. I don't think we're our, where I'm at, with identity, I'm talking about spirit. I'm talking about, and spirit and diamond are the same thing. I'm just using different kind of
terminology. Diamond. Yeah.
So, and I'm rambling on about it because it is for me, it is the difference that makes the difference.
Well, I think it's coming back to the trauma piece. It's like looking beyond the behavior, looking beyond and finding that child that's underneath there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The trauma is poop.
Yeah.
The trauma is poop, but kids are not their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have an obsession with understanding the trauma. We don't need to understand the trauma. Well, we do need to understand the trauma, but we don't need to understand it at the level. We need our kids... We need our kids to understand that they are their diamond, not the poop. They are spirit, not the trauma. Their identity is one of perfection. They are perfect. They are priceless. They are unwoundable. So the poop only ever obscures the diamond. It doesn't mm-hmm. change it. It doesn't, diamonds... Diamonds can't be scratched.
Right.
And.
So the goal here is to challenge someone to find and create trauma child focused materials.
That's the exploration I'm on at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great one to be on.
But it's trauma as in poop and the diamond underneath it. If we did Pareto's law on this, I would go for 80-20. Would go for 80-20. So I'll be talking about 80% of 80% on the on who we truly are,
mm-hmm.
and 20% on the stuff that we've been through, the poop in our hearts, the poop we've been through, and the poop in our heads.
Yep. So.
But obviously teenagers aren't going to take to something called poop, but I'm just doing that because it's a family show.
Yeah. Well, they're boys, maybe.
Stephanie, thank you. Thank you for asking that question, because it gave me a little bit of a chance to share my poop versus diamond philosophy, and hopefully that will land, and hopefully hopefully some listeners might try that with that.
And it helps me to understand as a social worker, so I appreciate you sharing. And I hadn't heard that analogy before, so there you go.
He's a gifted guy, Michael Neal, gifted guy. I have lots of the metaphors are great. I mean, one of the I heard a tricky one. You talked about interracial adoptee. I heard she's been on the show actually talking. She's interracial adoptee, came from Asia, and she said she was brought up in a white family, and she said that she felt like a banana, yellow on the outside, and white on the inside. Now, there's a lot of confusion there. There's a lot of confusion there. And there's a lot of confusion about identity in a lot of adoptees.
Exactly.
So this is a, for me, is the biggest focus that we can have, is clearing up that confusion.
Identity.
Well, we can't clear it up, the confusion. We have to share these stories, share these metaphors, so that the child, the parent has, the penny drops for them. The penny, insight needs to happen for them. We can't clear it up. We can't clear this up for them.
Right.
This is something that they need to see for themselves. It needs to be experienced by them. So rather than it being it needs to be an experience rather than a concept. It needs to be something that they see deeply rather than something that some slightly strange bloke called Simon says on a podcast that doesn't make any sense. We all have to see our perfection for ourselves.
Right. Yeah. So.
Great. So I will put some links to your agency and some social links on the show notes. And if you're looking for some help in this area, I think Stephanie would be a great person to get in touch with.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks, listeners. See you all soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.